Annual march in Washington, D.C., a coalition of activists is sponsoring the International Tribunal on Haiti with an open session on Friday, September 23rd from 7 to 10 p.m. at George Washington University's Elliott School of International Affairs, 1957 East Street. Testimonies and evidence of human rights violations, massacres, and murders of Haitians opposed to the U.S.-supported government will be presented. The tribunal will prepare a case to be submitted to the International Criminal Court. Buses will depart on Friday morning from Brooklyn, Queens, and New Jersey. For information and tickets, call Haiti Progress at 718-434-8100, The Answer Coalition at 212-533-0417, or Mache Lakai at 973-374-9697.
And you're listening to 99.5 FM, WBAI New York. It's 7 p.m., time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Good evening, everyone. The program is Off the Hook. We're joining you here from New York in the WBAI studios. This is Red Hacked. I'm joined by Jim.
Hello.
Mike.
Hi there.
Redbird.
Good evening.
Arseny.
Hello.
And Bernie on the line.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
And it appears that Emmanuel's travels have taken him so far away that he is unable to reach us by phone as he previously intended. We'll keep an eye out, see if he calls in, but otherwise, I guess we're on it on our own this week.
So what he's doing right now is he's in the middle of the ocean. Is that correct?
Yeah, he's taking a freighter from Japan to California, and that takes about 2 weeks. So this week and next week, he's on the ocean, and then from there, he goes via train across the country back to New York.
And the only reliable, or I guess not so reliable, method of communication he has is a satellite phone. Which he's used in the past to talk to us on the show.
Maybe pirates got him.
Oh, cheery.
This early into the voyage.
Yes, he just left, yesterday?
Actually, he was delayed a day, so maybe there were some kind of technical difficulties.
There's always technical difficulties on this show, but usually not involving pirates.
Perhaps it's international intrigue. After all, he was doing something controversial, that film of people speaking out whatever was on their minds. That could be interpreted as dangerous in some circles.
One thing I found amazing about that film and about his travel was during the course of the radio show, we always give out our email address, and constantly, whether he was in China, Tokyo, I think even Mongolia, people were emailing us and saying, "I'm here, come talk to me." And I remember when I was with him in Amsterdam, we were running. Arseny and I were with him, and we were running around the square trying to get interviews, and of course. There, at least most people were able to communicate with us in broken English, at least, if they didn't speak English because they were in Europe and most people there spoke English. But I remember asking him, what happens when you get out of Europe and out of any kind of English-speaking area where it's really not the norm for people to know English as a second language? It was surprising to see all these people kind of come out of the woodworks and say, I can speak to the Mongolian people. I can tell them what you want and why you have a camera. And, he got interviews in all these places. So I thought that was really, really interesting.
All right. I guess we will see if we can reach him. But in the interim, we'll talk about some news. One piece of news that I want to discuss is this follow-up to something we mentioned last week. This low-power FM station in Houston that was being set up by some folks from Houston Indie Media and some folks from the Prometheus Radio Project. This low power FM station was being allowed by the FCC but was being blocked by some very low official who controlled the physical space in the Astrodome, And in order to get around this, I guess they were able to now they're broadcasting from outside the Astrodome in this in the parking lot. But they are, as of yesterday, now on the air. So that's a bit of good news.
And I believe there's an article in the Village Voice about this as well.
I wonder how the radio communication is in the Pacific Ocean.
Hello, Emmanuel. You're out there.
I'm sorry I'm late. I'm actually on the freighter. I got on late. I got on last night at around 8 o'clock, and it's currently about. It's five after eight right in the morning, and we've just left Japan a few hours ago. We still see the land around us. And the reason I was late was because the breakfast was actually at 7:30 in the officers' mess hall, and we were being talked to by the captain. So I couldn't just leave. I couldn't just walk away from that. Very nice people here. There's only one other passenger on the freighter. A guy who's also doing a world journey of sorts. So very interesting conversations, things to learn, things to trade information on. The boat is basically a German flag vessel. We're hauling all kinds of things. I don't know what. Those modular cargo containers. This thing is as big as this thing is as big as an ocean liner. They loaded very, very fast. The boat pulled in last night, and I'd say about maybe 6 hours total in dock with these huge, huge machines lifting up these cargo containers and having 18-wheel trucks move them below the machine. The machine would grab them, pick them up, put them on the boat, get the next one. The whole process took about maybe 45 seconds per container, and they loaded the thing up extremely fast. So now we're on our way to Long Beach. It's a non-day journey, and we arrive, I believe, on the 23rd. And I got to tell you, this is something like nothing I've ever seen before. I was on the Queen Mary 2 a while ago. The accommodations here are so much more spacious, so much better, and of course, it's a lot more personal because you're actually talking to the crew. There are people who do work on the deck. There are people on the bridge. I've been on the bridge. It's very modern, very very clean-looking operation there. I even hear that there might be internet access of sorts via satellite. Of course, very expensive, but that would be pretty cool to be in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and actually be able to send in the web log. So basically, this is first few moments on the freighter. Next week, I'm also going to be on the same freighter, which is how long the trip is. And of course, satellite phone is the only way to communicate, so hopefully my voice isn't breaking up too badly.
It's all right. My question is, what were your expectations of the freighter from hearing about it ahead of time? Did you think it was going to be some sort of rusty tin can, or did you have an idea what it would be like?
No, I never thought a rusty tin can, but I did think something kind of small and cramped and maybe a bit hostile. Mm-hmm. As far as, the way passengers might be treated. Here we see nothing but, very, very friendly receptions. And it's just a very personal type of an atmosphere. Not very many people here at all. I'd say, at most about 15, 20 people working on the boat. And two passengers and a whole lot of cargo. So it's, to think about that, we're going across the Pacific Ocean on a boat. It kind of boggles the imagination, the sheer scope of the thing. As opposed to the Queen Mary 2, which had about 3,000 people on it, and of course the most ritzy accommodations you could imagine, and people walking around in tuxedos, couldn't be more different. And I couldn't be happier being on something like this. It was a bit of trepidation at first, especially when people tell you, but these things don't always make it to the other side, and nobody really knows when they don't. But it sure seems like these people know what they're doing, and it seems like something they've done. I talked to the captain before, and he's been doing this for quite some time. In fact, we're a day late because of the typhoon, which struck Japan only a little while ago, a few days ago. And you basically have to steer around things, otherwise it could be significant trouble. So always keeping a close eye on the weather. Things look pretty good for now. But it's something I really recommend. I'll give all the, assuming I make it back safely and in one piece, I'll give all the information to our listeners
can also enjoy these kinds of adventures. But so far, I have nothing but praise for it.
Can you can you tell us what you're looking at right now?
Right now, I'm looking back at Japan as it's receding into the distance. I assume it's Japan. And I also see... I see what looks like another boat behind us. Is that boat heading in our direction, do you know? Looks like another freighter. It would be kind of cool if there was another freighter behind us the whole time. But it could just be that there's a lot of traffic in the harbor. It's kind of a cloudy morning here, and I see mountainous terrain. And ahead, if I turn around, I see a boat. It looks like a tanker of sorts. A little bit more mountainous terrain, and then what looks to be like the open sea, or the beginning of it anyway. And can they get Hawaii or anything like that? But I imagine stuff like that is out there somewhere.
Does the freighter travel significantly slower than the Queen Mary 2?
I'm not sure of the speed. I guess I could ask the captain about that. It feels to me like we're moving at the same speed as the ocean liner, which I think was about, if I could use seaman's terminology here, 25 to 30 knots or something like that. I don't know. I can definitely find that out. There's all kinds of GPS information and computers and newfangled equipment of sorts down there.
Have you had a chance to check out any of that equipment or the engine room?
Well, no, considering I just woke up about 20 minutes ago, and really we just rushed it onto the boat. I got to say this, though. Getting on the boat was rather scary. It's basically, we were accompanied, me and the other passenger were accompanied to the dock, and we watched the boat actually pull in. And then we were just sort of ushered on board. Now, there's this ladder that kind of... it's more like a stairway, a slippery stairway at a rather sharp angle that kind of gets pulled over to the dock. So you sort of grab the stairway, you pull it over, and then you literally hop onto it. And it's so slippery, and it's easy to slip underneath the railing, and the thing is moving from left to right as you are walking up it. And it's very, very long. It takes about a minute and a half to get all the way to the top. And keep in mind that I had three heavy bags with me, so... That was a good debut, I guess, a good breaking into to the world of freighters. But it hasn't been scary since then. That's the scariest moment so far. Just basically been exploring the many decks, and we have a ping pong table, we have a pool, we have TV sets in our rooms. Now, you might say, how about a good TV is going to do you in the middle of the ocean? Well, no, it's you'd be wrong, because they do have a library of videotapes here, and I intend to make use of that as well. But also, you know, there's something really nice about not having access to things. In a way, I sort of am hoping I don't have net access, and that there's very little, as far as media, to tune into. There's no shortwave on the radio that I can see. There's long wave, there's medium wave, there's FM, and I don't expect to get too much, be something on long wave. But I'm also kind of looking forward to just being in the middle of the ocean and maybe just communicating with the stars, which hopefully I'll finally get to see the stars. You know, on this whole trip, ever since I left on July 17th, I've had maybe two clear days, and one of those clear days was a full moon. So I really haven't seen very many spectacular stars. I hope I can change that in the middle of the Pacific.
You better watch out for Poseidon as you cross the international dateline.
I'm sorry, Mike, there's a bit of wind that's picked up. Could you repeat that?
I'm saying you better watch out for Poseidon as you cross the international dateline.
Well, I didn't really hear you, but I'll agree with that.
Okay. It's good to know that you're on the lookout always.
Well, perhaps we should explain... Sorry, go ahead. I was going to say, we should explain to the listeners Mike's obtuse comment. Traditionally, when people first cross the international dateline in their sailing careers, a number of jokes and a mock ceremony takes place. And it's generally high spirits had by all. So look forward to that.
I'm looking forward to crossing the international dateline. I know it's going to be a bit confusing. My friend Dave just got back to the States. I guess it's today. But he left today. I'm so confused whenever I bring this up. But he left on Wednesday, and he arrived on Wednesday before he left. And gosh, I guess that means he's there now, or maybe he was never there. Now, when I go across the international dateline, though, I'll be going very slowly, so I guess I'll just have to relive an entire day.
Could be exciting.
Yeah, Andy McDowell.
Yeah, but
there.
Then for the second time or something. I don't know. I have to read a book about this. It's very confusing.
I'm sure they have such a book, and if they have a library, I'm sure it contains all the books you could ever want about the international dateline.
Yeah, well, hopefully they have them here so I can actually read them. Now, I heard you were mentioning the radio station in Houston. I have a question about that. Unfortunately, I don't have access to my notes, and it'd be very hard to access them even if I had them with me on this deck because it's extremely windy. But is that the station that's operating at a full 6 watts?
6 whole watts, yeah.
How much can they actually cover with 6 watts?
They claim to be able to cover, you know, the Astrodome itself and the immediate area. Obviously, not being in Houston, I haven't tested it myself.
I have something to
now,
add.
Is this station operating illegally?
No, they have all the permits. They got these temporary permits from the FCC. The only holdup was the local official in charge of space in the Astrodome, who was being very difficult, and they got around that by broadcasting from the parking lot, so they had to go to the FCC and amend their previous permits and all this stuff. But apparently it's all legal, and they're now broadcasting.
One more question, and then I'd like to hear what Bernie has to say about this. Is there a way to listen to this online?
If you go on their homepage, there's some text that says click here to listen live. But as of when I last tried it, you could not actually click there. It was just text, not a link. So apparently they're working on it, but unless they have very recently put it up, then it's not up yet.
And where would our listeners go to attempt to hear this audio themselves?
The name of the station is Evacuation Radio, and I don't have their URL. There it is. It's evacuationradioservices.org, and you can also get more information from Houston Indie Media, which is houston.indiemedia.org.
It's really worth commending the people at the Prometheus Radio Project for the political coup that they, not really a political coup, but it was quite a coup nonetheless to get the FCC to approve the installation of this emergency station on such short notice. This is very rare in this country. In Germany, I noticed, like at the HAL 2001 camp, it's commonplace in other countries for governments to grant temporary radio station licenses for special events, and that just simply doesn't exist here in this country. But I think with the urgent need for information promulgation in the Astrodome area and the Gulf Coast in general, the FCC approved this temporary FM station. Unfortunately, the officials in the Astrodome, as Mike mentioned, denied physical access to the Astrodome by the people who were volunteering to put up this resource. So they're broadcasting at 6 watts outside of the Astrodome. And
What's interesting... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
What's interesting is that, yes, you say that they were quick to approve this. In times like this, yeah, you have to not be a bureaucrat. You have to make things happen quicker than you normally would. And I think that was the problem with the entire evacuation fiasco that happened, where things just didn't move fast. People were sitting around and not working in an expedited manner. I saw a story right before I left Japan about another typhoon that hit China in the last couple of days, and how a city of, I think, 1 million people was pretty much evacuated in a matter of hours by the authorities there. They moved in, they got everybody out, or at least very close to everybody. And I was struck with the low-key manner in which that was done and the efficiency with which that was done. I didn't hear people complaining about, all the extra work they had to do, or people who weren't cooperating, or the challenges, they just did their job. And I think that's what we hadn't seen up until this point in the Louisiana disaster.
It's really remarkable, considering that probably those million people in China did not have the same access to mass media or cars and so forth that some people in Louisiana did.
No, but what they did have was access to a plan. They knew what to do. I was watching Japanese television during the typhoon that hit last week. Quite a few typhoons around here. In fact, I feel like I'm in one right now. I don't know if you hear this wind, but it's really, really windy up here.
We hear it.
But I'm sorry. If there's something I could do about it, I would. But there was the typhoon slammed into the western part of Japan. As far as it was as powerful as Katrina. Yet, what I saw on television, and this is something that we might want to take note of back in the United States, emergency workers and all kinds of authorities were moving in and doing things before the typhoon / hurricane had passed. So, in other words, they didn't wait 2-3 days to actually figure out what to do. They started doing it before it even ended. And I just think that unique way of dealing with a disaster like that is something that we can learn a lot from.
I think it's pretty clear that foreseeing consequences is not really a strong point of the Bush administration, planning in advance.
Yes. I'd like to introduce someone else who's here, a fellow passenger. In fact, the only fellow passenger on this entire boat. His name is Ben. He's from San Diego, and he's been involved in a very interesting world voyage as well. It's kind of cool that we're both on the same leg here. As I drift part of the satellite phone over the deck. We got it. I'd like to hand the phone to him for a couple of minutes, and you guys feel free to ask any questions, okay?
All right.
And he's here with Eric here, and he's off the boat. I'm on a voyage right now between Egypt, Cairo, where I was studying on a study abroad program, to California. So I'm trying to get there the same way Eric is getting around the world, which is via land and sea.
So what has been your route this far?
Okay, well, I started in Cairo, and I took a bus over to Israel.
Uh-huh.
And then from Israel, I took a boat to Cyprus. It was another freighter like this. And then a freighter from Cyprus to Greece. And then I took a train over to Turkey, and then busing through Turkey, took a boat to Russia. Then I took the Trans-Siberian Railroad, just like Eric here, across Russia. But instead of moving to China, I just went straight across, then took a boat to Korea, and then to Japan.
How long did this voyage take you from Cairo on?
Well, I left Cairo on June 9th. And so you can sort of figure it out.
It's quite a long trip. What are some highlights that you want to share with our listeners?
Well, let me thank you. Anything that I can say on the radio, that is. My Trans-Siberian stories are pretty similar. They're pretty much the same. I certainly have some. I haven't had anything too rough, but some of the ship moves I've had here have been a little bit rough. I get a little sick sometimes, but I don't know. It's actually been pretty trouble free for me.
There could be experiences that aren't trouble that are worth sharing.
Let me think. Any experiences I've had? Well, I mean, a lot of them. It's interesting, a lot of the religious tension in Israel, definitely. And Russian people are just something to behold. The people in Russia are very, very interesting people. And it's interesting to see the different national attitudes of people around the world, I guess. Highly recommend Istanbul, by the way. It's a wonderful city.
What was the country that you went through that you felt most distant from the United States during your travel?
Distant from the United States. it's funny because in a way, sort of Korea and Japan, I would say, because even though like living standards wise, they're definitely the closest to the States, culturally they're completely different. So it's definitely a good account. But yeah, I've been working in the United States for over a year now, so I can't even remember what it's like.
All right. Thank you. Is there anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I'm here, and I'm kind of back here.
We have, I think, back. No idea what you just said, but sounds like the phone's being passed.
Is there any way you can get out of the wind, Emmanuel? It's really becoming overpowering.
There's a signal, but let's see how this works out. I'm standing on the side of the boat now. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, it's a lot better actually, because now the past about 30 seconds we haven't understood a word.
Okay, I'm sorry about that. I apologize for the wind. But what's interesting here is I'm looking directly over to some cargo containers. They're stacked 5 high below me. And if you ever see one of these cargo, I haven't just. Things from over to New Jersey, the whole state is packed up with them. And, holy kidding, but there are a lot of them there, and various other parts of the world as well. They're big, they're high, and it's a perfect sight.
Speaking of New Jersey, we have a special guest with us who's also from New Jersey. This is, of course, our streaming audio guru, Junes.
Hello.
How are things?
Hello, Junes.
Hello. How's the boat ride?
The boat ride is great. It's very smooth so far. We just started a little while ago, but it's very spacious and just kind of odd as well. Pictures. Hopefully, I'll get them up on the net pretty soon. If those of you who want to keep up to date on pictures, I don't know how up to date it's going to be in a couple of weeks or so.
Well, we're kind of losing you there. We have to interpret what you might have said, but I think we got it.
Emmanuel, I have a suggestion.
Did you just fall into the ocean?
He's hit a whale.
Hello?
Uh-oh.
Hello, Emmanuel.
I think we might have lost him.
That's that. Why don't you tell us a little bit more, Junes, about what you do while we try and reconnect?
All right, well, I can do that. In fact, you know, BAI needs volunteers all the time, but we need a particular type of volunteer, if there's anyone out there listening right now that can help us out and provide some streaming bandwidth. If you happen to have a spare server with some spare bandwidth lying around that you can relay our MP3 signal for the station on, that would be great.
How much bandwidth would you want?
Well, it's not your typical DSL or cable modem connection. What we're looking for basically are the big T1 and T3 and optical carrier types of connections. The people that are helping us out now typically own or run streaming farms and just allocate a little bit of bandwidth for BAI. But if there's anyone out there that can help out, we can always use an extra server. But basically, yeah, that's what I do is I keep all this stuff up and running so people on the internet can listen to us.
And the contact info, of course, oth@2600.com.
That's right. Or you can find my address on the website. I won't spell it here, but I'm Junes, so.
Okay.
Did we read the street address? Did I miss it?
No, we wouldn't want to leave you out of that. We were just reading
right,
the email address.
I have it written down in front of me. Hang on, I hope this paper doesn't blow away. If you wanted to write to us via regular mail, you can do so by mailing a letter to Off Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
Walter's not there?
Walter's not here, unfortunately.
You know, when you have a job to do, and his job is to read 10th floor every week, I would hope that someone would take that job seriously. Can someone find out where Walter is and bring him to the station?
We'll work on that for next week, but in the interim, we'd better read the city line.
All right. Let's continue with the address. New York. New York.
10005.
And I apologize to the listeners for the broken up and mess that was just right over the air. We'll do better next week.
Emmanuel.
I'm sorry?
I have a suggestion on cutting down on the wind noise. If you remove one of your socks and place it over the satellite phone as an impromptu windscreen, it may help your audio fidelity.
Well, Bernie, let me paint a picture for you here. I'm standing on top of a freighter that's starting a voyage over the Pacific Ocean. It's very, very windy up here, and the decks are extremely slippery. And you want me to take off my shoes and one of my socks to stick over part of the phone. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, gosh, I'll give it my best try, but, you might hear the splashing of water as I hurtle over the edge here.
This may be a technique that might have to wait for next week.
Yes, by then I should know the crew a lot more. Well, look, we're right next to another freighter, and we're going a little faster than that freighter. I see it over there. I wonder if it's going to be this way all the way across the Pacific Ocean, where we see other boats around us.
Are they going in the same direction or opposite?
They're going in the same direction. But we're kicking their ass. We're moving a lot faster than they are. Yeah, that's right. I'm waving at you. Oh, boy, there is competition on the high seas. This is going to be interesting.
You better be careful not to offend anyone.
I think those guys are from New Jersey, judging by those mannerisms.
Okay. What makes you say that?
You have two people from New Jersey in the studio right now.
Three. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. It's sort of like a touch of home, it makes me feel better, but, once I get there, I'll be all apologetic and everything, but...
You better not come back. The New Jersey people will be close to you. They might attack you.
Well, I have California people to make fun of first, so, of course, I'll have some time to do that.
All right.
But anyway, let's get back to items in the news. What else do we have this week?
Bernie, I believe you have some stories.
This is not technical, but we've mentioned before several times on this station about a sort of a sovereign community in Denmark called Christiania.
You have news.
News from Christiania is that there was sort of a circus that the citizens of Christiania had set up, and the police came in and... and broke it down. They raided the circus. So that's the first circus raiding I know of. It just seems like the authorities in Denmark don't want the people of Christiania to have any fun at all. So we don't know what's going to happen to the poor circus animals, but the police have effectively shut down the circus in Christiania.
In a way, this I'm going to take a little bit of good news out of this, which is that information about Christiania is very hard to come by. So this lets us know that at least it still exists, or it existed last week anyway.
This is actually the first I've heard that Christiania even still exists myself, and I'd like to sort of give a virtual kick to the people over there to update your web pages. Okay, a lot of people have web pages who live in Christiania and. They haven't been updated in a couple of years, so we don't know what's going on over there. If the authorities are moving in and throwing people out, or doing all kinds of other things. And, we have a radio station here. We have a way of communicating with people. We have a way of spreading the information at a moment's notice. But we need the source of the information to see us. So please, if you're over there in Denmark, let us know what's going on, because Mike and I have both been to that very unique neighborhood. And it's it would be a shame to lose it, because it's there's nothing like it anywhere in the world, I don't know.
Not that I've ever seen.
For the benefit of the listeners, Mike, can you describe that neighborhood a little bit?
Sure. Christiania is a part of Copenhagen, the capital of Denmark, which used to be, I believe, a naval base, except that... The Navy left, and some folks, some anarchists, I guess, if you want to get ideology into it, said, this would be a nice place to live. So they moved in without the permission, of course, and they set up their own sort of government-free zone.
where people can just come live, and they have sort of their own structures and most importantly, lack of structures. And they've really, for a long time, were able to just kind of exist without so much interference from the Danish government. The Danish government these days is a lot more right-wing than it used to be, and they are, you know, one of the things that people like to do in Christiania was sell hash, and the Danish government is really kind of offended by this. So they were, for a while, you know, raiding the place on, I believe, a fairly regular basis. And so I'm kind of curious to know how it's changed. But that's the brief story.
And just recently, when the circus was raided, the authorities apparently arrested about 100 people. So it doesn't look like the authorities need much of an excuse to arrest anybody in Christiania. But they arrested about 100 people when the circus was raided.
For what, circusing without a permit?
Apparently.
Okay.
I'm very curious if the circus existed or what kind of circus it was, but I guess we'll learn more about that.
Maybe it's like Circus Amok, which is in New York, but they have a permit, so it's okay.
We have some news from FEMA, the new adjective in our vocabulary or vernacular, as in, I really FEMA'd that one up. Apparently, most or... Oh, I hope that doesn't mean we lost Emmanuel.
I believe it does, but we'll try and reconnect. Why don't you go on?
Well, the news, according to the Wall Street Journal, is that last week FEMA's email servers were down virtually all of last week, which was a particularly critical time to require communications. But... several other government agencies that tried to email urgent requests to FEMA had all their emails bounced back to them because FEMA's mail servers were down.
Were the mail servers located in New Orleans, or is FEMA just inept?
I would venture to guess the latter. FEMA is not headquartered in the New Orleans or Gulf Coast area. It's headquartered in Washington, D.C., and regardless of where they're located, one would think that an emergency management agency like FEMA would have some sort of redundant mail servers or backup mail servers to handle excessive traffic, which I'm sure there was a lot of traffic last week, but apparently the servers were just down all of last week.
Yeah, so one might think that they would have redundant backups, but one would be wrong.
Yes, apparently they did not plan to have lots of traffic on their mail servers. And so that's your federal tax dollars at work, FEMA in action.
Apparently they didn't plan in the event of an emergency that perhaps their services would be overloaded, which is interesting.
I think perhaps we're jumping to conclusions. I would not put it past someone angry with FEMA to take their anger out on whatever FEMA server they could find. So it may not be their fault.
I haven't heard hackers blame for it yet, but that would be a very interesting point, Jim. I bet hackers would be.
I think it's unlikely. I think it's unlikely, but in this case, I do not think it's impossible. I think it's more possible.
Incidentally, we've had some feedback from listeners as far as our move to have FEMA enter into the dictionary as a verb meaning to completely mess something up. So I think someone actually made some entries in Wikipedia or something, and hopefully that will be that'll catch on in the English language.
I think someone else took them out of the Wikipedia though, because they weren't there when I looked, and you could see them created and removed in the page history.
Well, I guess we'll just have to have a wiki war about it then, and keep it back in.
Sounds like fun.
There's some news about one of our other favorite agencies, sort of, which I'll go about a slightly long way. You may have wondered what Steve Brill, the founder of Court TV, has been doing lately. He's been creating a company called Clear Registered Traveler Program. For $80, you can avoid all those long TSA airport lines. He has about 10,000 people signed up in a pilot program paying $80 a year. They take their information, their name, their address, their birth date, social security number, two forms of government-issued ID, Digital images of an applicant's fingerprints and irises are made. The biographical and digital information is sent to the TSA, which checks it. And then this is encoded onto a little card that you take to the airport. And the idea is you take this to a kiosk and you put it in. And if your boarding pass is marked with the dreaded SSS symbol, subjecting you to more scrutiny, according to Mr. Brill, quote, "When you come to our kiosk and put in your card with your prints, our attendant puts a big TSA stamp on your boarding pass that overrides the four S's."
Is that actually mentioned in the article?
That's a quote by Steve Brill, who's running one of six companies, that by far the largest one, that's doing pilot programs around the country for registered travelers to try to alleviate those long lines at security.
Now, do we really have to explain to the listeners how stupid this is, or can we just assume our listeners are so much smarter than the TSA obvious?
Do the two-line quick explanation of why it's stupid.
Because a terrorist could enter the program and thus avoid being searched.
Exactly. Furthermore, there are further flaws. One gentleman says, if you pass this secret test, you'll get one of these things. But if you aren't cool enough to pass, we're not going to tell you why. And another frequent flyer points out that expediting the journey for the most frequent and therefore the most influential travelers would reduce pressure significantly to enact necessary changes in standard airport security. In other words, it's the traveling equivalent of the rich get richer, the poor get poorer. Those who travel more often get the benefit of this card, whereas poor schlubs still suffer.
And we've mentioned this on the show time and time again, but it's
worth repeating.
Pretty clear that the most effective method for selecting people to be screened is actually the random method, because if you use any factor at all, then the I don't want to say terrorists, the evildoers or the people the TSA doesn't like can determine which of their membership has more and less of this factor and send the people who have less of this factor, whatever the factor is, on these whatever they're going to do.
I'm told, incidentally, by the way, you guys suddenly sound really weird on the satellite phone. I don't know, is my voice sounding the same?
It sounds fine. I've been turning you down when you're not talking, because otherwise there's too much background noise. But,
okay, well, I'm trying to stand out of the wind, but it's, what happens when I stand out of the wind is that I have less sky to look at and I get cut off. But I guess it's worth the trade-off of not hearing the wind. I was saying how your voice just cut out. I totally lost my train of thought. What was it you just mentioned?
The TSA, the pass?
Yes. I'm told that when we arrive, when we get close to the United States, we can expect all kinds of interesting security procedures with involving the Coast Guard and having to close certain doors and not do certain things. It's going to be very interesting because I've never approached the United States by sea before. So I'd certainly like to see what kinds of steps they take. So I'll be watching that. I'll be reporting on that. Next week at this time, I think I'll be almost at the United States. I'm not sure if the security cautions will be going into effect at that point. Who knows? You may even hear me being searched live.
Sure.
It's quite possible. Also, next week, I'm going to be, I think it's going to be a Wednesday afternoon for me. Right now, it's early Thursday morning. So I will have crossed the international dateline by that point, and the time will have moved to late afternoon, I think. I'm pretty sure that's going to work.
Now, the question is, of course, how many sunrises will you see between now and then, and is it seven or not?
How many satellites what?
Sunrises, not satellites, will you have seen by then, and is it seven or not?
I don't know.
Yeah. You should let us know how many satellites you see as well.
Start counting
them.
Yeah,
well, we saw some satellites in Holland, remember?
Yeah, we did. That was amazing. Conference. That was the first time I've ever seen a satellite.
It was pretty cool. And I'm hoping that I can see some, a satellite other than the moon in the sky here. I'd like to see the Northern Lights, but I don't expect to do that. I'm told that all the doors to the deck are locked. And, well, it's a nice day. It's the beginning of a nice day. I'm sure when we don't show up for lunch, they'll come looking for it. So, all right. Well, this just serves people listening. When you're on Trader, don't go outside unless you know that you have a way to get back in. It's fine. There are many doors here and quite a few cargo containers. It'll be fine. There's nothing to worry about.
I'm wondering what the need of locking doors on a freighter with only 20 or so passengers is.
Yeah, well, you know, I think maybe it's to send a message. Just send a message to the new passengers that, you know, you better watch out. You're not running the place. We're running the place. And if we have to lock you outside for, you know, a day or two to prove that to you, we're going to do that. It could be that, or it could just be a misunderstanding.
Emmanuel, it's about 7:45 now. I think it would be about a good time to start taking phone calls, if you don't disagree.
I would love nothing better than to take some phone calls right now. But I would also hasten to caution you that there are certain buttons on the console that you could consider to be hot buttons. And if you press those buttons, you're going to hear certain voices that will just make me... It'll be like chalk on a blackboard all the way out here in the Pacific Ocean. So please be careful.
I'll try to figure out which ones of those aren't. But if you'd like to call, the number here is 212-209-2900. I'm going to give it a minute because I feel like the one person calling on all four lines is one of the people we don't want to talk to.
Ahoy, Minnie! I'm sorry, I just wanted to say that.
Okay. While we wait for the calls to come in at 212-209-2900, a bit of an event announcement. Our friends at Negative Land are having a show called Negative Land Land at the art gallery called the Gigantic Art Space, which is on Franklin Street in Manhattan. So if you have some time, you can check that out.
All right.
I'm kicking myself being out here on the freighter because I would love to be there seeing that. I heard about that show, and it's so perfect. I think it's going to be until October, though.
It runs through October 22nd, so there's still time.
All right. Let's try to take a phone call, see what happens. Good evening. You're on the air. Oh, I guess they're not. All right. And good evening. You're on the air.
How you doing, guys?
Hi.
I don't know if you remember me, but about 3 weeks ago, I called you from prison. I'm that guy that's been in jail for 30 years for the blue box situation.
Right.
I remember.
Yeah, and I just want to tell you that I got a whole bunch of letters to me here, supporting me and wishing me the best, and even got a new attorney out of it who's going to represent me for free.
All right.
Did you give out your address last time?
No, but I guess that they were able to find out. There are ways to call the prisons, and they'll tell you. I'm kind of famous. I'm the only one here that's under those charges.
Do you want to give out your name so people can contact you further?
Well, my name is Bartholomew, and that's all I can say. I'm
okay,
number 9. Cool. I tell you my ID number. It's 9177041. And that's how you can get in touch with me. I have a question, please.
Yes.
Why is that guy on the boat?
Oh, that's a very good question. But basically, what I'm doing is I'm going all the way around the world. I started on July 17th by land and by sea. I'm making a movie, doing all kinds of travel logging information and visiting with people as well. So it's just basically an adventure. But we like to bring you adventure here at WKI.
Okay. Well, listen, I'd like to be on a boat right now, but I'm not. I'm in a small cell, but that's cool. I'm going to be out in 3 years. So
maybe I'll go on
a boat then, you know?
All
right. Thank you, guys.
Yep.
Keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you. All right.
Thank you.
Let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling from Bulgaria. I'm Bobson. I met some of you at What the Heck, remember?
Hi.
Hello. How's it going?
Hi.
Well, I thought it was going to be funny to have someone calling from the Balkans on the GSM and some people in New York talking to some other people in the Pacific Ocean on some satellite technology.
All right.
Anything to share with us while you're here, while you're on the air?
Well, I was wondering if we could go around and say what time and what date it is, wherever it is that each of us are.
All right. Well, for us, it's 7:50 about.
in New York.
It's Wednesday evening.
For me, it's 2:51 a.m. on Thursday, September 15th, and I can't hear if Emmanuel.
Emmanuel, what time is it and what day is it where you are?
It's about, I'd say about 8:50, 10 minutes to 9 in the morning. And I should also point out that since we started talking, I see much less land. I see some mountains over to the north, but nothing ahead of us except the water. So we are definitely moving out into the sea now.
All right.
Well, thanks for everything you're doing with the show and everything else.
All right.
And have a great time.
Thank you.
Thank you for your call. Okay. That was interesting, I'd say. All right, should we take one more phone call? Oh, we got time.
Yeah.
Wow. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh. Wait up.
And good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. Fascinating thing, taking a freighter like that. Where exactly is he right now, Emmanuel? Where are you, Emmanuel?
I'm sorry, I'm having trouble hearing. Can you speak up a little bit?
Where exactly are you? I missed that part at the beginning of the show.
I'm just to the east of Japan. We just embarked on a freighter about 4 hours ago, 3 or 4 hours ago. So we're making our way into the Pacific Ocean.
And have you seen the engine room yet?
I have seen the engine room. I've been on the bridge. In fact, I was invited to the bridge and told I'm welcome on the bridge anytime I want. It's really cool. I mean, you know how long it took Wesley to get invited to the bridge in Star Trek The Next Generation? It took a long time. Here on the first day, well, anyway, I'm not going to dwell on it, but yeah, I do want to see the engine room.
Yeah, because that's 100-year-old technology, but when you're on a freighter like that, it's quite amazing the size of those things.
Yeah, it works.
How big is the freighter?
I would say the freighter is about, as far as measurements. It's big. It's as big as an ocean liner, I would say. Maybe well, it's wider. Yeah.
We're not quite understanding the numbers, but we are getting the idea that it's pretty big.
It's pretty big. It's big. It's got to be fascinating. So more power to him. Have a great time.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, two quick things. First of all, it's not really what you would call a freighter. It's what's known as a container ship. These are these large 700 to 1,200 foot long vessels that dock in Bayonne or Hoboken and load on 1,000 truckloads, 18-wheeler truckloads of containers. And secondly, what port did you depart from, Emmanuel?
Jim, I heard your voice, but I couldn't get anything you were saying. I don't have anything important.
Good enough.
All right. Let's take another phone call. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hello, this is Ludy Joe from Oklahoma City.
Hi.
Bernie had some comments and questions about the response and the recovery efforts down in New Orleans, I think.
Yeah.
Bernie?
Yes, hello. What can you tell us about recovery of telecom systems down there?
Well, basically, the industry rags have been talking about how tough it's been to restore cellular and telephone service. Obviously, you would think that, well, cellular have antennas up in the air and they ought to work real easy, but as a matter of fact, unless their generators and all their electronics were up on stilts, then they're dead and they're going to stay dead. And even at that, the cellular companies very often rent wireline circuits from the local phone company in order to connect their cell sites together, right? So, duh.
Right.
It all goes down.
Are those the personal computer people I see?
No, they haven't come in yet.
Oh, they're around the corner. They're on the way down the hallway.
I'm sure they are.
Okay, well, one recommendation I would have is use something besides a sock over a microphone. I mean, come on, this guy's traveling. His socks have got to be rank by now.
Well, you know, fortunately, the telephone is an audio-only device, so...
Thank you for that call.
What else?
Ooh.
Okay.
I thought that was over. Well, we're almost out of time. Should we take one more phone call?
Yeah, let's.
Let's see if we can squeeze one more in.
All right. Well, we only got one, so... good evening. You're on the air. No.
All right. Let's not.
Well, that was our last phone call there. So I guess that'll be it for the evening. Emmanuel, any closing thoughts?
No, just that this is an amazing way to continue the journey. I'm in the United States now. It'll take me my day or so. And next week at this time, I'll be all the closer on the same boat. We'll see if I've driven everybody else crazy by then. And I look forward to getting back to WBAI land.
When will you be back at WBAI?
Either in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. But I'll be back in time for the fundraiser, which begins the first week of October. So
All right.
I don't think I would miss that.
All right. Well,
remember,
that's it.
You can write to us, oth@2600.com.
Right, that's oth@2600.com. I think that'll about do it this week for our show. Last week, for anyone interested, at the end I played a song by a New Orleans band named Liquid Drone called The Fools and Their Fences. And this week I have another New Orleans, a song from an artist in New Orleans named Ugorji. This is called The Music. So enjoy. Good night.
Thing I need.